Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Monday morning at 8 o'clock, which means it is time for our friend Corey Curtis from News 2 to join the program on our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Corey Curtis brought to you by Tennessee Men's Clinic. Corey, happy Monday to you. Hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving weekend.
It was a delight. Yesterday was truly something I won't forget. It was amazing.
Yeah, I was. You know, I said it earlier. If you're watching the Titans over the last 3 years, it's been a lot of bad football. You've had a lot of games to choose from. Yesterday was up there in terms of the worst. It was 25-3 score. They got nothing done offensively. Like half the stadium was empty at the game yesterday against Jacksonville.
Yep.
I guess the most disappointing part, Corey, you know, beyond the loss, which we've come to expect at this point. Cam Ward, I felt like, took a pretty good step against Seattle, and then I felt like it all came crashing back yesterday.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're thinking like the big positive last week was how well Cam Ward played, then the big negative this week has to be how poorly he played. Because, I mean, shoot, look at the Minnesota Vikings, right? How good were they last year with Sam Darnold?
Pretty darn good.
And how trashy are they this year without him? You know, with J.J. McCarthy and who played yesterday? Max Brosmer?
Yeah, Brosmer.
Yeah, I mean, it was special what they did. And it just goes to show you how important that position is. You know, you can have the same roster, but you change out that one spot, or that one spot doesn't play well, and everything can come to a crashing halt. And I'm not saying the rest of them played well by any means, but he had a bad day. And, you know, the first drive was pretty good, but it became pretty clear pretty quickly that he wasn't the same guy he was the week before. You know, the decision-making, he seemed paralyzed at times as to what to do. I think that's what got me is he just looked confused as to what to do. I'm sure he would tell me I'm wrong, and that's fine. But, you know, there were times where he had a pocket to throw from, and, you know, had time to get rid of the football or had time to step up and just didn't do any of those things. You know, there were times where, you know, JC decided not to block anyone at all, and that was problematic. But there were just times where he just didn't look clear on what to do. And on top of that, when he did, his accuracy wasn't very good.
No, I totally agree. We were talking about that earlier, Corey, and that's what I wanted to ask you. Because you talk about not having answers. Obviously, if you're a Titans fan, and you obviously you want Cam Ward to work out, you want to believe in him, you hope that some of that is like on the coaches, you know, maybe in some instances for him not having answers. But my question for you is, because I totally agree, in the pocket at times yesterday, it was actually a pocket. He did not seem to realize it was a pocket. And so you get into the whole seeing ghosts thing, which I think we saw with Marcus Mariota as his career progressed. You see with a lot of quarterbacks in this league when they don't trust their protection. And I just wonder if you thought yesterday was an example of that, of quote-unquote seeing ghosts, and whether maybe just all of the beating he's taken, all the sacks and all the bad protection he has experienced is starting to affect him when he actually does have opportunities to throw.
Well, I might, except, you know, why would it be worse after last week? I mean,
right.
why would he be more hesitant to run after last week? I mean, that's why, like, you know, maybe, I mean, that could be, but I don't know. I don't know if their coverage was confusing him, and so he just didn't know what was going on out there. He just didn't seem like he knew what to do with the football. The other thing is, I'll have to go back and look at their third downs. They had a lot of third and manageables that they didn't execute because he threw a lot underneath yesterday. I mean, shoot, his average yards per attempt was like 3.5 by the time the game was over. But that's because he threw a lot of underneath stuff to where they would have like, you know, 2nd and 6, 3rd and 4. You know, they were very manageable. You know, and that's why I was looking for him to run more yesterday, is because they were in more of these manageable situations where you escape the pocket and you move the chains. He had one late in the game, I think, where he finally went and did that, and he fought through and he moved the chains because It was third and manageable. So I don't understand why that would be the case after last week. And again, a lot of these sacks are self-created. And I'm not saying them all. I mean, there are certainly times where there's nothing he can do. But there was time yesterday where he found pressure, okay, where he could have gotten rid of the ball, where he held on to it long enough for the pass rush, you know, to get to him. And, you know, there's times to get rid of it. And Mike McCoy talked last week about taking less hits, about getting rid of the ball sooner when he gets out of the pocket, you know. And it was the total opposite. It was, you know, and I guess I will just chalk it up to a rookie quarterback. You're going to get inconsistent play.
So, Corey, I agree with everything you just said, particularly yesterday. I mean, there were some plays that he didn't make where the pocket was there. Having said that, there are some snaps from J.C. Latham.
No, they're horrible.
That are just awful. And,
you know, he got Tajay Spears killed.
Yeah. I mean, it was, and that was one of them I'm talking about where he just totally Olay'd on Josh Hines Allen and he just got him smoked back there. You know, I realize we're a little bit over a year and a half in now, so I'm not going to throw out the bust word, but it's pretty concerning with J.C. Latham at this point to me.
Well, the one question I've got is how hurt is he? Now, I know he's not showing up on the injury report, but is the hip still a problem? And then, you know, yes or no on that is going to depend on how I feel about things. But my other problem is he's 6 foot, what, 6 and 350 pounds? And you would expect that guy to be a willing combatant gladiator punishing people. And I don't see it. I don't see it. And I don't understand that. I don't understand how that guy isn't imposing his will on people smaller than he is. How he's getting pushed back by those guys. That's what makes me wonder if the hip is a problem, is because he's getting put on skates by some of these guys and having a hard time anchoring his base at times. He's too big and too strong to struggle to anchor his base against smaller opponents. So I really have to wonder if something is going on there, because, you know, yesterday wasn't good enough.
So, Corey, some interesting comments. You know, obvious frustration and understandable frustration from the locker room, but you know, you got Cam Ward talking about, you know, we haven't made any strides, but you know, some of the comments from, like, you know, Jeffrey Simmons talking about, basically said, you know, we got to get a coach in here, you know, which of course, you know, is coming, but even like Arden Key, I have no idea what he's talking about, but it was cryptic and it just seems like yesterday really rubbed the play. Do you take that as players sick of Mike McCoy, or am I making too much of a leap with that?
Look, I don't care if they're sick of Mike McCoy or not. They're making excuses for playing absolutely horrible. All right, they need to look in the mirror before they look at the interim head coach. Okay, when the interim head coach got the job, it was to get the team across the finish line and then go get a new coach. So if you're going to blame the interim head coach for why you didn't play well, I've got pushback with that. Look in the mirror, play better, be ready to play, be ready to compete, be ready to be disciplined. Is it Mike McCoy's fault that Arden Key gets in a fight on the sideline and gives up 3 points for his team? No, it's not. That's all on Arden Key. You know, Jeffrey Simmons always plays well. I don't have a problem with that, but just, you know, I didn't expect Mike McCoy to be perfect. I don't think he's as bad as everyone else thinks he is, because everybody picks apart every little thing he does. He took over a bad football team, okay? He's not the NFL coach of the year. He's not Ken Whisenhunt, okay? He's there to get them across the finish line. And if you guys were looking for him to come in here and resurrect the team like Alex Golish down in South Florida, who took a team from horrible to 9 wins this year, and to do it in 9 games or whatever, I'm sorry. He doesn't have that magic wand, okay? He doesn't have that magic wand. You guys have to show up every day and work and have some self-accountability for it. That rubs me the wrong way.
So, Corey, Vanderbilt waltzes into Neyland Stadium and just thumps Tennessee in the second half. They win 45-24. They get their first 10-win season in program history. Pavia is going to be right in the thick of the Heisman Trophy conversation. What did you make of particularly how dominant they were in the second half and where things kind of fall now in the college football playoff picture front?
Well, I mean, the fact that they're able to overcome two first-half turnovers and still lay a 21-point beating on them is really impressive because it's not like Tennessee has rolled over. They played well, you know, to finish the year. And so, you know, they were coming in there to win that football game. And Vanderbilt, you know, clearly was a team on a mission and didn't let anything distract from what that mission was. And as far as Pavia goes, I got a couple things. But first with Pavia, I don't get how he can't be higher in the Heisman. He is like 1,000 yards ahead of those other guys that he's up against in total. So if you want to point at stats and say, well, he doesn't have Heisman stats, he is like 1,000 yards ahead of all of those guys in total yards. He's got more touchdowns than all of those guys, and he is more important to his team than any of those guys are to their team. I don't think any of those guys come to Vanderbilt and win 10 games this year. I'm sorry. I've watched this team for a long time. All right. I think I know what I'm talking about a little bit here. I mean, what he's done both physically, mentally, and emotionally to change that football team, he is a huge part of it. And for him not to be a higher Heisman consideration for some people is crazy. And then the other thing about Vanderbilt is if there's a power T on the side of their helmet with their resume, they're in the college football playoff.
No, that's not true. No, I totally agree with you on Pavia, 100%. You are not. That's not true, Corey. If they end up with no rank,
I'm going to listen to you, Joe. That's fine. What is it about their resume that's not good enough?
Well, they don't have. I mean, we'll see if Tennessee stays in the rankings. But if they don't,
they're not in the rankings.
Okay. Well, then they're going to have. Well, then they're going to have no ranked wins, Corey.
Well, but they had four teams that were ranked when they beat them.
But Corey, you know how this works
on their schedule. Yeah, I do know how it works. Teams lose.
Right, so if
Vanderbilt beats them and they drop out of the rankings.
No. South Carolina was supposed to be good this year. That should have been a huge win. They sucked. So that win doesn't count for you. So compare their resume to the other teams. Like I'm not trying to like downgrade Vanderbilt here, it's not a helmet scouting situation. It's not. It's unfortunate for them. It's bad luck.
Starting the year unranked and having to work your way back in and being historically bad hurts them.
I think it probably hurts them with some people.
With three losses.
Right, Corey, but Texas beat Vanderbilt, and Texas also played at Ohio State and lost by a touchdown. Now, the Florida loss should count against Texas.
It was horrible.
No, and they just beat number three. So they have wins that Vanderbilt does not have, including against Vanderbilt.
We're never going to agree on Texas over Vanderbilt.
I mean, I agree with you, Corey, that like there are people who have a bias against Vanderbilt and probably in that committee room too, it's Vanderbilt, and like you said, they weren't supposed to be good. But like if you really seriously compare the resumes and the wins and the losses, Vanderbilt got a raw deal that South Carolina sucked, that LSU sucked, that Missouri faded, that Oklahoma all of a sudden makes these that's not helmet scouting. That's the breaks. The breaks were bad.
But don't you think beating those teams is a part of what led to their meltdowns?
I mean, I don't know. Not necessarily. I mean, I think that the problem with Missouri is that they.
LSU was top 10. There were some people who thought that was a talented football team.
Right, but like their meltdown like started well before Vanderbilt, didn't it?
They were ranked 10th in the country when they played the Commodores.
Yeah, I mean,
so I guess they hadn't melted down too far.
Missouri lost their QB in that game. Like some of it is bad luck, like on that front. I mean, South Carolina was a disaster this year. I mean, I don't think that Vanderbilt broke them. They're just a disaster.
Yes, it's unfortunate. And you know what? It just gives us more ammunition for a 16-team playoff. Because
thank God,
make it 24. Let's go 24.
I've always been good with 12-16. If you want to go to 24, that's fine. I've never felt like that many teams could actually compete for the title. But with NIL,
I don't want 24.
But I think things with NIL, more teams can compete now. I do that. But that doesn't mean I think two group of five teams can play. But we'll see.
We'll see. 615-737-1025, our phone number.
That will be interesting.
Corey, great stuff as always. We got a big showdown coming up next week with the Packers and the Bears. We'll see if we're on speaking terms come Monday morning.
You know, we'll see who the top seed in the NFC is after next week.
That's true.
Because right now, that team resides in the Windy City.
That is true. I cannot argue with facts. That is true.
Okay, I know you guys have to go. And I'm not making this a Chicago Bears conversation. I'm making this an NFL conversation. This league is so week to week this year.
It's pretty wild.
I mean, to see Philly go down at home,
except for the
Bears like that, they did not look good. To see the Rams lose at Carolina, I mean, you know, I don't know who's going to do what. I really don't. It is a crazy week to week league this year. This is the year to be a 6 or 7 seed and make a run in the playoffs. It literally is going to be who's ever playing the best ball in January. That's the team.
Corey, thank you, sir.
All right, later.
Corey Curtis brought to you by Tennessee Men's Clinic. Lots to react to there from Corey. We'll do that coming up next. Vanderbilt takes down Tennessee on the road. They thump them in the second half. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. This holiday season, 102.5 The Game, looking out for the kiddos. We're going to donate a bunch of stuffed toys to the Nashville Children's Alliance to be given to kids this holiday season. But we can't do it without you. Join us at a Dunkin' location near your neighborhood the week of December the 8th through the 12th to drop off a stuffed toy that a child will love. You can find the locations now at thegamenashville.com/toy. Again, thegamenashville.com/toy. Also, we'd like to thank the Metro Nashville Police Department for their help on this promotion as well. Taking your thoughts on what Corey Curtis had to say, Vanderbilt waltzes into Neyland Stadium and just punks Tennessee in the second half. They win 45-24. Vanderbilt picks up their first 10-win season in program history. And now the college football playoff discussion underway. Joe, we went through the picture earlier. It's looking pretty unlikely that Vanderbilt is going to get in the college football playoff. They frankly just didn't get a whole lot of help this weekend. And there are a lot of teams that they needed to lose that did not lose. Oklahoma looked like they were in trouble and then figured it out. Alabama looked like they could be in some trouble against Auburn. And then they pulled it out at the end there. So after a 10-2 season, Joe, and playing, I think, clearly their best football at the end of the year here, it doesn't feel like Vanderbilt is going to make the college football playoff at this point.
No. Listen, you never know what people in that committee room will think. I think that they should look at Vanderbilt and understand that what they did at Tennessee is not normal. Like, no one does that. Do they have that discussion in there? Do they have that context in there? That two teams have blown out Tennessee in Josh Heupel's tenure at Neyland Stadium. They are the 2021 and 2023 Georgia teams. 2021 Georgia team, one of the great teams that we've seen in recent years. That's it. He usually wins, and if he does lose, it's more like missing a field goal that would have beat Georgia this year and losing overtime. So there should be stock put in to what Vanderbilt just did. Will there be? I don't know. I think there should be stock put into Diego Pavia and the Vanderbilt offense. I would argue right now, and I know there's a bias here. This is Nashville Sports Radio. I've been around Vanderbilt football a lot, you know. So, there's some bias here, and there's someone who could step up and say, hold on, you're not thinking of this team. But I've thought about it, and if you give me any offense to take into the college football playoff right now, I'm taking Vanderbilt's offense. I understand that Ohio State has two star receivers and they've got a quarterback who's really good, but also, if you watch the Michigan game, you want to get into the Heisman discussion, Robbie? Julian Sand, he's really good. The dude stood there with no pressure and threw to wide open receivers, and that's what he's done all year. He has not faced a hint of game pressure. He has the best defense in college football on the other side. He is the most advantaged quarterback in the country.
The Carnell Tate touchdown, I don't know if there's a Michigan player within 15 yards of him.
Right. I mean, it's like you could have punted it to him. So, I hate to knock Julian Sand for that, but, there's no comparison. I'm totally with Corey on that. I'm Pavia for the Heisman. I think the committee should take that into account. This offense, I mean, what you're supposed to ask is, you know, can this team win games? Yes, you're judging resume, but also we know they're judging what they think a team is. They're judging, well, I think this team's really good. That's what they've been doing with Notre Dame. They should do it with Vanderbilt, and it's offense in particular, and this game should be a signal. It ends a season in which they're at the top of the charts, and like most offensive stats nationally, they're right under 40 points a game against a team with, I think, six top 26 scoring defenses in the country. Really good defenses. So you hope, if you're a Vanderbilt fan, that they have this discussion and just reset things. But when it comes down to it, and this is where I disagree with Corey, like, this isn't them. I mean, if they don't get in, if you compare the resumes, the problem is the wins that – just don't hold value right now, and that's how you have to do it. I'm sorry. I understand they have three top 15 wins this season, which is a program record. And I don't – I mean, maybe Corey's right. Maybe some of those wins, you know, hurt the teams they beat. Whatever. That's not part of this. Are those wins valuable now? And the fact is that teams they're competing against have wins that are more valuable now on their resumes.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I don't think there's anything – that's arguable there, except, I mean, the one I keep coming back to is, like, Notre Dame and Vanderbilt, pretty close, man. Like, I understand that, sure, USC is ranked 17th in the college football playoff rankings. I mean, you tell me, who wins on a neutral field, USC or Tennessee? I know my answer. It ain't USC. So, like, some of this is, I think, a little bit more nuanced than just the, well, USC's ranked 17th, there's a ranked win for Notre Dame, and Vanderbilt doesn't have one.
Yeah, I agree. Look, I think they're very close. Those teams should be very close. Vanderbilt and Miami. Vanderbilt and Texas, like Corey's dismissing. I mean, look, I tweeted, like, Texas probably would be ahead of Vanderbilt now. I mean, it's a really interesting discussion because Texas beat Vanderbilt. And, yes, it was a three-point game, but if you watch that game, like, they were handling – whatever. It ends up a three-point game. Fine. So they beat them. They lost by a touchdown at Ohio State. Any Texas fan will say, well, see, if we would have scheduled – Sam Houston State, then we'd be 10-2 and there'd be no discussion. That's fine. They lost by a touchdown there. They just beat number 3, which, by the way, Texas A&M played none of the top, I think, 7 or 8 teams. A lot of this is how stupid these massive conferences are. That's the underlying problem here, right? But, I mean, Texas, but then you also have the loss at Florida. Vanderbilt has two good losses. You know, they lost at Bama, they lost at Texas. Florida has the disgusting loss at Florida. So how do you – I mean, I think it's a really close discussion with Oklahoma, with Texas, with Miami, with all those teams. Utah, I think Vanderbilt should be ahead of Utah for sure. But I unless the committee has discussions that – and I think they should. They should really dig in on Vanderbilt. But unless there's some changes of heart based on what we've seen so far, then I think Vanderbilt's just going to be on the outside looking in tomorrow night. And then, yeah, really no drama for the championship weekend.
We'll take your thoughts on Vanderbilt's win at Tennessee, the college football playoff discussion, Diego Pavia, and the Heisman Trophy. All of it coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe will be broadcasting live at the all-new Circa Sportsbook Kentucky in the Mint Gaming Hall today prior to the Monday night football game. Monday night matchup, the Giants taking on Vrabel and the Patriots. We'll see how that goes for Jameis Winston out there tonight. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Vanderbilt waltzes into Tennessee and destroys the Vols in the second half. We'll get into what that means for Josh Heupel on the Vols coming up here in just a few minutes. You know, Joe, I know there's a limitation on what you can say being a Heisman Trophy voter, so stop me if I'm getting too nosy here. But I just
– Yeah, I don't care.
Well, the Diego Pavia part of this, like, you know, he threw the two picks early in the game, and I was like, well, you know, it looks like the Heisman could be unraveling here. And then he was just darn near perfect after that, right? Like, he made every right decision. He threw for 268. He ran for – an additional 150 on the ground. Like, he was incredible in that game. So I know that conference championship weekend is coming up and the votes aren't going to be held until after that. But I have to think Diego Pavia has put himself right in the thick of the Heisman Trophy race. Not just the finalist race, but to win.
He should win the Heisman. He's the most outstanding player in college. I think he's the best player. I think he's the best player in college football. And I don't want to disrespect Vanderbilt and what Clark Lea has done to, you know, adding a talent like Trey Richardson, for example. Cedric Alexander is a really good running back. Their offensive line dominated Tennessee. They have some good players on defense, and they've had some good defensive performances. You know, Lea, his coaching staff. I mean, like, there's a lot of credit to go around. But if you do the whole take him off the team, if you took Diego Pavia and the way he's able to, again, I equate him to a point guard who is constantly running like a two-on-one break and is perfect at drawing defense and then making the perfect pass for a lob dunk or a layup. He's just out there. They had the one play. It was almost like a jump pass. It looked like it was a QB draw, and then right before he gets to the line, you know, he rips it to a wide. I think it was Stowers on that play. It's just infuriating to deal with the guy. If you took him off Vanderbilt, I think Vanderbilt is like a 6-win team, like something like that. I mean, again, like, you got to tell me who's playing quarterback. I mean, you got to have really good quarterback play to even get to that. He's the best player in college football, and he's done. Again, like, just what he does and what he has done for that team. Yes, there's a bigger picture. Some Heisman voters don't want to get into Vanderbilt's history and a two-year thing of, like, changing the mindset. Okay, fine. I still say he's the best player in college football, and the numbers say it now. Like Corey said, his total offense and touchdowns accounted for, they blow everybody else away. So it's just their yards per play. Again, they have been kind of screwed over with the playoff with how some of their opponents have fared. But they have still played a lot of really high-ranking defenses who have high-ranking defenses in the SEC, and Vanderbilt is shredding them. So Saiyan, I won't even listen to, man. I'm not listening to Saiyan. He's really good. He is the most advantaged quarterback in the country. I can't – he hasn't had a snap of pressure this year, like game pressure. He seriously has not. Now, Fernando Mendoza, as I think Ohio State might actually beat the crap out of Indiana Saturday. Like, Ohio State,
boy,
we might just –
Cincinnati mad. You're going to make it mad.
Yeah. Hey, I hope not. I hope it's a great game. It's like this great game with no stakes. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, basically, the winner will be the one seed, and the loser will be, like, the four seed, and they'll get a
– We're going to have to get rid of conference championship weekend. Yeah, it's becoming pretty clear. We're going to have to get rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just – but I mean, I would assume that at least with this game, these teams should be excited for it. I mean, it is for a championship. Indiana has last won a Big Ten championship, like, what, 1967? So I guess from their perspective, like, wouldn't it be huge to
be – I'm sure they're
fired
up about it.
But at all of it, the conference thing just is so diluted by 29 teams in these leagues all over. But anyway, if Mendoza does ridiculous things Saturday night, because I'm not submitting my vote until after this weekend. If he does absurd things and single-handedly carries Indiana to a win in a game where it's clear it's a mismatch, maybe other than him, then, you know, I think he's got to get strong consideration. Jeremiah Love right now, he's great. I think he should be in New York. But, yeah, right now I think Diego Pavia should win the dang thing. I think he should. And it's going to be interesting to see. I'm very interested to see the results of our staff poll.
Yep.
Last week Pavia got 5 firsts. We'll see if he gets more. I know Stu Mandel and I are 2 that gave him firsts. And then, you know, and we'll see if this weekend changes it. And just if people around the country think the same thing, because obviously this is a very regional vote, and maybe Big Ten people are like, no, it's Saiyan. He's the quarterback on the best team. Saiyan's like their 6th best player, dude. Diego Pavia is not Vanderbilt's 6th best. You can't be the not best player on your team and win the Heisman, can you?
I wouldn't think so. I mean, it seems to be counterproductive to the actual award there, but we've seen it happen before. Let's head back to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Kenny the Mailman to the program. Kenny, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Hello, good friends, fighting sinuses and exhaustion. I don't know if I've slept well since Saturday night.
Big night for Kenny.
I can't really describe to you what it means for a longtime Vandy fan to be able to go and win in Knoxville. It's only happened like 4 times since I've been alive, and I'm not a spring chicken. I have so much respect for Plainin Neyland and Tennessee. I'd like for Joe to explain to me, you go to a team that's ranked 17th, beat him by 3 touchdowns. You're sitting on the ball, just letting the time run out. And then you wake up and the AP voters have dropped them from 12th to 13th. How does something like that happen?
That's a good question. I don't know. I will say that my guy and our friend of the show, Ralph Russo, had him 15 this week. I mean, I may have to have a, you know, in-house mutiny there. That's silly. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that happens in life, because if you graduate from a prestigious school and everything, it's above different things and getting jobs and everything. But if that someone had an Alabama helmet on and they did that to them, there would only be 49 states in the union today. I mean, you just look at people and go, what? You expect things to be fair, but nobody will be able to take that win away at all. It was just unbelievable for us. But I do think they would change the name to the College Invitational Tournament, because what they do, y'all have seen archery contests where they have the red, yellow, and green circles you shoot the arrow into, right? Well, what they do, they just put up a blank target, shoot an arrow, run down there, draw a little circle, and yell, "Bullseye, Notre Dame fans!" You know, if it is what it is, just say, hey, you've made us invite two smaller teams, but we need millions and millions of views for the television rights and everything. The rest of them we're going to invite who we want. Because I'm fairly convinced Texas will be ahead of Vandy when the next ratings come out. So, but nobody will ever take this away from us. We're going to get the DVD hat and T-shirt, and it has been just an amazing season beyond description.
Thank you, Kenny. Great day. Appreciate it. Appreciate the call.
Thanks, Kenny.
Yeah, like it's
good perspective.
It's good perspective. And, like, you know, I said it earlier, the biggest thing about it was it was not a fluke, them walking in there and just kicking Tennessee's butt. Like, you know, I was watching the game at the press box at Bridgestone Arena, and I looked around at a couple people that were there at halftime, and I was like, well, Diego Pavia has thrown two picks, and it's 21-21 at the half. That is probably not good news for Tennessee. And, boy, was that not good news for Tennessee, Joe. I mean, they just killed him in the second half.
No doubt. And, you know, for Kenny's point there, if you're a Vanderbilt fan, like I know right now it's obviously it sucks. You know, your team's probably not getting the playoff, and your team's good enough to be in the playoff, and your team's good enough to do damage in the playoff. But you also hope that you can still appreciate what your team just did in Knoxville, the season your team just had, the history it made, the potential for like a program that now actually has a shot to be competitive and to hang in there and be, you know, be a winning program moving forward. Like, you hope that you can keep those things in perspective. And maybe if Pavia wins a Heisman, that helps too, I would think, right? But it also, it's like the playoff has become such the obvious dominant discussion point of this entire sport. It just stinks. Like, this resume last year, there's no question. Vanderbilt is in the field.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Final thoughts on Vanderbilt's win at Tennessee, plus what does this mean for Josh Heupel and the Vols moving forward? We'll get into all that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Tonight on Totally Hits 93.3, catch MTSU men's basketball as the Blue Raiders take on UAB at 6:30. Coverage also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and at TotallyHitsNashville.com. Vanderbilt wins 45-24 against the Vols in Neyland Stadium, their first 10-win season in program history. So, Joe, we've gone through the Vanderbilt side of this. What about the Vols? What does this mean for Josh Heupel and the company? They finish 8-4. We'll see where they end up in the bowl game. But 8-4, a lot of conversation in the immediate aftermath of the game about Tim Banks, defensive coordinator, you know, what his future is going to be. Does Heupel make a staff change? Are more staff changes coming, even maybe beyond that? And, you know, I said it last week, Joe, the difference in narrative heading into the offseason for this game, pretty darn massive. If you win, you're 9-3. And you close out the season on a high note, and you're looking at what's coming back next year in the roster, and you're feeling pretty good if you're a Tennessee fan. You lose, and it ain't going to be comfortable for Heupel heading into next year. And I think that's exactly where we are right now, Joe. So what do you make of where things go from here from Josh Heupel?
Yeah, it's going to be a huge offseason. I can't – like, you talked earlier about, you know, he should fire Tim Banks. I could see that, and maybe he should. I think that some sort of staff move is, I hate to say necessary, because again, I just don't know. Like, I don't know all the stuff behind the scenes. We were talking last week about, you know, maybe just getting Boo Carter out of there. Look at what they did at Florida, right? And then you see this defensive performance against Vanderbilt, against, again, an offense that I think can take it to any defense in the sport, which is part of, again, why it's a shame. We're probably not going to see that in the playoff. But still, it's been a disappointing defensive year. So I just think that some kind of move with the staff makes sense. He knows better than anybody else what that is. You know, the question you have is the coaching fine and that's why he doesn't do anything, or is he almost too much like, I'm not going to be like Bob Stoops and who scapegoated me when at one point I was supposed to be the heir apparent. I'm not doing that to somebody else. I mean, I can see that being the case. Problem is, like, sometimes you just have to do it. You have to improve your staff, you know? So there's that. And then you mentioned earlier, Robbie, the portal. Should they be more active in the portal? I would definitely say they need to be active, and they need to be effective at some significant adds. While also, of course, you always have to retain your players. If they just retain their players with how they've been recruiting, they look good on paper next year.
Yeah.
As long as quarterback play is good. But it's a critical offseason. It's a critical season next year for Josh Heupel. It does not take long, certainly in today's college football and in the SEC and at Tennessee, for someone to go from a ice-cold seat to a hot seat.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, again, you know, this is also part of college football playoff expansion. Like, if you miss the playoff and you're right, a program like Tennessee – well, if you miss it 2 years in a row next year, that's a problem, right? Like, your fan base – and look, I understand Tennessee's got an extreme fan base anyway, but your fan base is going to freak out if that's the case. And look, I don't blame Tennessee fans, by the way. Let me be clear. Like, they're getting all this money from Adidas. I mean, all my timeline on Vol Twitter is right now is yelling at Danny White about talent fees and this being the payoff for it. Like, Danny White's in the crosshair right now, too, of the Tennessee fan base. So when you're doing all this stuff, like, you better win. And bottom line is, you know, there's a lot of things. Like, go back a calendar year from the college football playoff until now with this Tennessee football program. There's a lot of stuff that's gone on, right? You've had the whole Nico thing and quarterback situation with Joey Aguilar worked out pretty well in the long run. But at the end of it, you look at the schedule, they basically played four good teams this year. I mean, by their records, they ended up playing four good teams, and they lost every one of them. And three of them were at home. That's a problem. And that's something that's got to get fixed. And we went through the schedule earlier. It ain't going to be easy for Tennessee next year. They got a lot of high-profile games next year. So it's a critical offseason for Heupel. Kind of feels like a little bit of a crossroads moment for him as Tennessee coach.
Yeah, and you mentioned Danny White. It's you know, he has not endeared himself to a lot of people. He's very good at what he does. He raises money. He's done a lot of good things. Heupel was his hire. You know, Kim Caldwell, they got beat by like 20-something yesterday by a very good UCLA team, but that was his hire. You know, obviously, he didn't hire – he lost Vitello. I don't know that, you know, you should blame him, but fans are mad at him. You know, like, he could be under, like you said, like under some fire himself, at least from the fan base, you know, depending on how things go. And, yeah, look, it's a huge – next few months, and it really – it's very interesting to me, Robbie, just with considering the weight of next season, the difficulty of the schedule too. Very difficult. Yep. Lots of them at home, which you feel good about, but they just lost three games at home. Does Heupel feel like one of these young quarterbacks, a redshirt freshman or a true freshman, can win enough for him, or does he go out there and – which is guaranteeing him to lose at least one of them, by the way – so as a future play, you could argue against it, but does he feel he needs to get out there for one of the top possible quarterbacks and pay big to bring in a veteran?
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting decision because they're going to have a very talented roster coming back next year. Do you want either a redshirt freshman or a true freshman quarterback leading the way on that front? That is going to be something that he's got to figure out. Bottom line, It's a disappointing end result for Tennessee. It's a season, as Kenny the Mailman just laid out, to remember, regardless of the college football playoff or not, for Vanderbilt fans. 10 wins, Clark Lee gets the extension, so you don't have to worry about him going anywhere. And Diego Pavia very well could be in the running. I mean, he's in the running. Well, he could very well could win the Heisman Trophy. So what a weekend for Vanderbilt and Tennessee. We'll see if they can rebound and get back in the college football playoff discussion next year. Joe, a lot happened while we were gone. It was fun to discuss it all this morning.
No doubt. Sorry I yelled earlier.
Maybe tomorrow we'll spend like an hour and a half yelling about group of five playoff teams. That'll be fun. Looking forward to that. That does it for us today. Next man up with Jake Lyman coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.